Okay? So, notice how wide and general the scope of the transcendental argument is. Mike Butler had suggested to you in his exposition today that a transcendental argument's got to be something that's not like pool tables or the game of pool. It's got to be something that is so situated in our conceptual scheme, so central or close to the center, that it has wide-ranging impact. Another way of putting that in philosophical terms is that it's systematically fundamental or systematically applicable. Because it is so close to the center of the web of beliefs, it touches just about everything else we do. So the principle of causation, the laws of logic, the notion of personal identity, those sorts of things would be principles. Or you can take the way we operate in the world. The fact that somebody says, if the milkman's going to know not to leave eggs, tonight I have to leave him a note. That doesn't seem very profound. But that operation within the realm of experience itself would make no sense. Why would you leave the milkman a note if you didn't assume that there's some causal connections within the world, that minds could communicate with each other, that the words on the page, provided he's an English speaker, could communicate to him, and so forth? So the first step in a transcendental argument is to take P, whether it's a general principle or an operational feature of your experience or your thinking, and now show that Q is the precondition of P, which is to say that Q is necessary to explain the possibility of P. Another way of putting this, I'm just giving different languages, show that Q is presupposed by P. Not that it's deduced from P, not that it's induced from P and analogous P's, but that it's the presupposition of P. And how would you do that? How could you show that Q is presupposed by P? Now, in our case, Q is going to be the Christian worldview. So when we do apologetics, we don't have to start with miracles or angels or fear of death or anything. We start with anything. Start with leaving a note for the milkman. Start with, you know, science trying to show what the cause of cancer is. Start with the laws of logic. Start with anything you want. And what we want to show is, if you didn't have the Christian worldview, you wouldn't be able to show that P was possible. How would you demonstrate that? I'm going to give you two methods here. One I call the indirect method, the other the dilemma method. And some of you sharper logicians will actually point out they're one and the same, it's just different versions, but that's okay. I think you'd like the variety approach, and so I'll give it to you two ways. One, the indirect method says, not Q. Q is the Christian worldview. That's what we're going to show is presupposed by P. Here's my argument. Not Q implies an absurdity or renders the operational feature impossible. Not Q. If you deny the Christian worldview through a series of considerations, it doesn't have to be just two steps to it after all, but not Q would imply an absurdity or, alternatively, would lead to a contradiction of P, which is undoubted. Now, having said that, I've got to go back to my take P and tell you why I put the word undoubted in there. When we argue, we start with something that is not doubted. Notice I didn't say something indubitable. I could have. I was tempted to make this a richer presentation, but then it would be more complicated. The point is, when I argue with somebody, I'm going to start with something that he doesn't doubt. Something about his experience, about his thinking, some general principle. See, I'm not going to try to have the foundation of my argument or my debate some kind of platform that's wobbly. I'm going to say, give me something that you aren't going to have any question about. I mean, that you take for granted. What is your given? Everybody has one. Except who? Maybe the skeptic. But what's the problem with the skeptic? What if he says, well, the only thing I can give you is there is no rational justification for rationality? I'll say, I'll take it. Thank you. That's what you know for sure, right? Now he might say, no, I didn't say I know it. And I say, well, but you're asserting it, right? Well, asserting and affirming is the same thing, yeah. But you see, the point is he hands me something that he's not doubting. Granted, in doing it, he stepped on the basketball court. And now I'm going to slam dunk him. All right? The best thing for the non-Christian to do, to be very honest with you, is to say, I'm not going to get involved in this. I'm not going to say anything. Just turn around and walk off the court. But give me something that you don't doubt, even if it is everything is doubtable. That sentence, when you assert that sentence, I'll take it. That's the beauty. That's how wide-ranging this thing is. Any P. But the point is, it's not a wobbly P. It's not an uncertain thing. It's got to be something that the person you're talking to takes for granted. And everybody does. There aren't many really self-conscious skeptics in this world. Okay? So you're talking to your neighbor. Your neighbor assumes that science is, what, operating on a secure foundation. The person believes there is a connection between what I see and the way the world really is. Most people are naive realists, and I think that's fine. They should be, because being made in the image of God, they should assume the world they experience is very much the way they think about it, because God made us that way. But my point here is make sure you deal with whoever it is you're dealing with. It's something they're not going to come back and say, oh, well, I doubt that. So take what is some undoubted principle or operational feature, and then show that if you deny the Christian worldview, you either have an absurdity or you're led to contradict the P which you didn't have any doubt about. Or you render the operational feature that you're talking about, scientific methodology, assuming that there are real objects out there, you render that feature impossible. The feature might have been just asserting P or knowing P. You start with the unbeliever, say, what do you know? What are you willing to assert? And then from that, you show that the Christian worldview, if denied, if you deny the Christian worldview, that operational feature is either impossible or the principle that you've been talking about, excuse me, or the P that you've taken for granted is in fact false. Can't know it. That's called the indirect method. It's proving it indirectly because you take the opposite position and show that it creates this intellectual difficulty. And since none of us want that intellectual difficulty, we want to assert P, or we want to have this operation, or we want to have this principle, then we've shown that the Christian worldview is necessary to what you already know or what you're thinking. Now, the dilemma method, this is a little more sophisticated in terms of your philosophical outlook, but the dilemma method says, take P here and show that it implies Q, and show that the denial of P implies Q as well. What if somebody says that adding insulation to your attic will lower your fuel bill? I say, okay, if that's true, that implies that God exists. Now, the argument is not just the assertion that I gave you. It's going to be a long set of considerations. But basically, if we don't live in an orderly universe where what we've experienced in the past is the basis for predictions about the future, then you couldn't make this kind of claim predicting about the future. But now here's the interesting thing about a transcendental argument. What did Kant say? The conclusion of a transcendental argument is not a particular theorem. It's a principle for understanding all theorems. And so now what I'll say to the unbeliever is, well, and the interesting thing about this is, I can take the opposite of P and show that it proves God exists too. If it is true that adding insulation to your attic will not lower your fuel bill, that's because God exists. For you to know that or assert that, once again, you have to have causation, you have to have induction, you have to have observation, and so forth. So I'm not trying to argue about fuel bills or insulation in your attic. I'm saying any argument, whichever way you go, is going to imply the existence of God. P implies Q and not P implies Q, but it must be true that P or not P, it's one or the other, therefore Q must be true. Which is really a long, quasi-fancy way of saying, you've got to believe in God in order to prove anything. It's a principle. The Christian worldview, the Christian God, is a principle that makes intelligible arguments for specific conclusions or theorems. Yeah, you're demonstrating that the transcendental procedure is talking about the precondition of all intelligibility, whether it's about fuel your fuel bill going up or down. Now, here's the interesting thing about dilemma. Let me say this real quick before I forget to put it in there. What if somebody says, well, what if P is God doesn't exist? Mansell says, okay. Or let's say P is God exists and not P is God does not exist. Mansell says, you want to show that, this is the easy part, if God exists, that implies that God exists. No problem. Everybody says, that's wonderful. However, and this is the fascinating thing, if you argue not P, that also implies that God exists. At one point, Vantil summarizes what he's getting at when he says, anti-theism presupposes theism. Not P wouldn't be intelligible unless P were true. Now, do you see why this is such a strong approach to apologetics? You don't have to worry about whatever a person has up there. Take any experience about fuel bills, about the cause of cancer, about a historical fact, about miracles, and take any point of view you want to argue, even the atheistic point of view. And the transcendental argument says, to argue that point, you have presupposed God. That's right. Vantil many times says, any statement, any fact can be used to prove the existence of God. Now, he may be wrong. I don't think he is. I think this is brilliant. But you have to understand, that's what his program is. That's what he's attempting to lay out for us.
It doesn't just prove the existence of God, but it proves the innate knowledge that we have within us, that we make that statement.
Right, well... Right, and the Christian worldview gets into that further by explaining why we're in touch with objects is because we're made by God, made to know Him, and so forth. Real quickly here, before time runs out on our tape for today, I'd like to finally point out that the transcendental method is useful on either interpretation of transcendental arguments, either the conceptual or the existential, what might call the ontological interpretation of the arguments. On the conceptual transcendental interpretation of the results of what you've just been doing, what we say is, if you wish to argue at all, alternatively, to use predication language, to reason, to make sense of experience, whatever, if you wish to argue at all, then you must presuppose the existence of the Christian worldview or God to make sense of your own argument or communicating it. And here the word must is interpreted psychologically. If you want to reason, to make sense of your reasoning, you must psychologically presuppose the Christian worldview. Now that's not the strongest form of a transcendental argument. That's not the strongest interpretation of the result, I grant you. But you know, if that's all we have with what Vantil is giving us, we've got enough, don't we? Because basically, what I'm saying to the person who argues with me is, well, if you want to argue with me, you have to assume that you're wrong. I mean, not right out, but through our discussion, what I want to point out to him is that you're assuming the very thing you're arguing against. Even if that's only a psychological remark, that you must do that, that our conceptual scheme requires it, remember, what are we doing in apologetics? We're only dealing with those who want to play basketball. I mean, reason giving. So we're going to say, if you want to engage in reason giving, you're going to have to assume that I'm right. The stronger interpretation, the existential interpretation, says, if you wish to give an account of our ability to know anything, or argue, use predication, reason, make sense out of experience, then your explanation must presuppose the existence of the Christian worldview. Here the must is not the psychological must, that you can't escape thinking about the Christian God when you argue the way that you are. Now we're saying that your explanation of our ability must include, necessarily includes, a reference to the Christian worldview. There's no way to explain, to materially account for, our ability to know things unless you make a reference to the Christian worldview. In fact, many references to the Christian worldview. So you have two interpretations, and all I'm going to get at is, I think that the existential is the stronger and is legitimate. But even if somebody said, well, all you're showing is that we've got to think as Christians, they'll say, I'll take it. That's pretty good to tell people, if you're going to think at all, you've got to think as a Christian. See you tomorrow.